The psychedelic revolution is here. If you want to integrate your visionary experiences into your purpose, get clear on your entrepreneurial path, and help people while you do what you love, then this podcast is for you. Welcome to The Psychedelic Entrepreneur, Medicine for These Times. I'm your host, Beth Weinstein. I'm a spiritual business coach, three-time entrepreneur, and a lifelong student of psychedelics and sacred plant medicines. You carry your own unique medicine, and your medicine is what we need for these times. This podcast will help you to share your medicine so you can create transformation in the world. Listen in on conversations with psychedelic leaders, changemakers, and conscious entrepreneurs who are living proof that a better world is possible when you follow your heart and live in alignment with your soul. The spirit of grace is with us. So, hey, everybody, welcome back. I'm Beth Weinstein. I'm here with Jabron Rivera. Hey, Jabron, thank you so much for being with us.
Hey, Beth, I was so excited to get your invitation. Looking forward to this.
I'm so excited to be having this one-on-one with you. So Jabron Rivera is a teacher, coach, guide, and master facilitator. He is devoted to the development of leaders and leadership networks. Jabron is helping us meet this unprecedented moment. He works to help us figure out how to thrive in times of VUCA, VUCA?
VUCA, yes.
VUCA. Yeah. Volatility, uncertainty, complexity, and ambiguity. Oh my gosh, you cannot say that any better. He is the originator of the Evolutionary Leadership Workshop, host of the Better Men Project, and one of the teachers of What Should White People Do, which I was actually in his first cohort, which is why I'm bringing him on here. His work brings close attention to the dynamics of power, equity, and inclusion. He has designed and facilitated the coming together of some of the most prestigious fellowships in the country, and he specializes in the transformational offsite retreat. His work is based on the understanding that our next evolutionary leap depends on trust and the currency of love.
Ashe.
And he is devoting his life to defining better ways of being together in this world. I just got chills because this has been coming up so much for me, which is why I'm so glad to have you on right now, is about leading in this place of love and compassion. And me being a student in your very first cohort with you on Tuesday, back in 2020, that was really a pivotal moment where I saw, like, this is the future of what our world needs. Mm-hmm. So let's hear your story. How did you get onto this path? And, you know, talk about your, I always love to know, what was your former career? You know, were you working in corporate America,
yes,
that kind of thing?
Yes, I'd be more
than
glad
all
to tell you. Exactly. But actually, there's a funny story about that. But I do want to pause and highlight what you said about our approach to the work on race, right? Like, that class is specifically created because we think that people don't learn through shame and guilt, right? And like this kind of dogmatic shaming of whiteness is not exactly how we're going to get out of the mess we got ourselves in. So I just wanted to say that, because sometimes you say the equity, inclusion, power, and people put you in a certain box, and we're working so hard to not be in that box. But I would share the story, which is, I was born in Puerto Rico, and we were just at my parents' house celebrating my mother's birthday, and my brother and I were asserting how idyllic our childhood was, you know? There's four of us, but it was three of us talking, and just beautiful. I mean, like, you just could not have had a better child. Humble, very humble, but just perfect, you know? And that was dramatically interrupted when we moved to Western Massachusetts. And we moved to Western Massachusetts to be part of a Puerto Rican intentional Catholic charismatic community. Okay, so there's a lot of words there. I always want to say, by intentional, it doesn't mean everybody lived in the same place. It was multiple cities. The intention was the shared intention, which I think is important for us and your community to be talking about. We can be in community and not live next to each other. But it was, but and by charismatic, I mean it was still Catholic. It was as Pentecostal as you could get while remaining Catholic. And by Pentecostal, I mean praying in tongues, singing and dancing, praying for people by putting your hands on them, like loud, musical, like kind of very Holy Spirit, Afro-Latin vibe to Catholicism, right? So it was like so many people were leaving the church for something more fun that so it was an interesting thing. So just to say that was obviously formative, right? Spiritually, but it was also the age at which I became a person of color. I became a minority all of a sudden, right? And that's awful. Like it's a terrible thing to be a kid, to be a child, right? And be looked at like you're dangerous or bad or unwanted here. And that's not in people's imagination. That's real. Like within months of my arriving, I was being, as a 12-year-old kid, I was being hauled to a police station. Like this is the truth, right? And I wasn't a bad kid. I was actually helping out. Somebody was getting their money taken from them, and I was intervening, but I was in the scene. Anyway, I gotta tell you my story, and I can't get stuck at 12, right? But I'm saying it because spirituality, and kind of, by 16, I had read the autobiography of Malcolm X, and it politicized. It gave me an understanding of my experience, right? So coming from a colony, you understand that there's something, you don't have freedom, right? Then you have the minority experience, and you read this book. So like it politicized me. So now the kind of spiritual experience, this embodied spiritual experience, and my political experience are woven together, right, in this kind of quest for liberation. And I will not tell you as many details as what unfolded after, but I'll say was one of the few in my community to get out and go to college. In college, started to kind of question some of the religiosity. Was introduced to the critical theorists, so started to like break down a lot of the dogmas that I grew up with, including political and racialized dogma, right? And so that opened me up to what became to this thing that happened, which was a spiritual initiation that I was not asking for or even looking for. And on like September 11th, 2004, 3 years after the event, I wanted to do something spiritual. The church wasn't the place for me. I went to this chant, and I was received this transmission, this ancient tantric transmission that like turned my life inside out. And it took years for me to come to terms with it and life falling apart. During that time, I had engaged a political path. So I had organizer, activist, all the way to running for office myself. So, but then I managed to blow my life up. Not because I wanted to, just to be clear. I managed to screw up big enough, right, to blow my life up, and that brought me to surrender my heart to the spiritual path, and that shifted my work. Went from like more antagonistic, right, to more agonistic, more like facilitation, bringing people together, still in the context of social movements, right? But bringing them together. I think I haven't let you get a word in edgewise, but to get to the theme of the podcast, years into that spiritual development, it almost felt like, you know spiritual people, I'm sure your listeners, many of them are. There's a spirituality that is very ascendant, that goes up, right? Transcendent, and a kind of away from here, right? And so there was something about the practice that had awakened me that tended in that direction. And something in it happened where, like, it was like the energy turned around and it became descendant, right? More towards the earth, towards what's here, towards what we got to contend with in front of us, right? And that's where, like, the medicine came into my life, the holy feminine, the goddess energy, right? The earth-based kind of, what does it mean to be here in the rub with each other? How do we live that out?
Wow. This is an incredible story. I had no idea. And, you know, it's interesting, especially being a person of color in Western Mass. So for those who don't know Western Massachusetts, at least probably back then, because I actually went to school in Western Mass for a couple years, and I went from suburban San Francisco to Connecticut, where in suburban San Francisco, I was actually a minority. And when I moved to the East Coast, to Connecticut, where it was all white and all Catholic, I had a literal like breakdown. I was like, where am I? You know, I'd never even visited parts of this country like that, because all my family was from urban Chicago and urban Bay Area. So I cannot imagine, but this is incredible. But of course, this is the path, right? So I love that you brought all this up. And, you know, you said something beforehand that I do want to talk about, because it's been interesting, especially within the psychedelic world. There's been a lot of confusion and discussion around how do we approach the diversity and inclusion. And of course, this goes for every world, right? I personally come from a Buddhist path, which is the path of compassion and love, right? And then we see the world change very quickly over the years. And of course, you know, the Buddhist group I was a part of was with Josh Korda, who's a Dharma Punks, who's also very much an activist and always has been. And so they took a very like kind of hardcore approach to compassion, you know, like compassion, but we need to fight at the same time. So, you know, in your work, because this has been coming up so much around like what is leadership and what is the future of our world and how do we all get along, and how do we have right relationship with these plants or the earth or each other or the divisiveness of disagreeing on, you know, everything is divisive these days, you know, you name it, and it, you know, strikes a chord in someone. So I'm curious, let's hear a little bit about your work and your approach, because I do believe this is a very important approach to take, is like you said, like this love-based approach.
Great. Yeah. Great. Where do I begin with that? I believe in the ethos of the warrior. I have a 10-year-old son, right? And he is in one of these great schools that those of us that can afford it, we send our kids to. And sometimes I see how some of what is masculine in him, and sometimes aggressive, right? And he's a sweet kid, but like a lot of that, we're like, no, right? And he, you know, I don't believe any of us would have been here if that energy wasn't around. So I just want to be clear about that. Like, these are times that do require a warrior ethos, right? But it is all in how you hold it. So what I like to invite people to do, maybe your listeners, if they're willing and able, they can do it. It's like, take a fist and just close it. Just close your fist, right? And then make it really tight. Really, really, really tight. Really tight, really tight. Right? Feel your body, right? And now keep your fist closed, but just loosen it. What you're holding is not going to fall. It's still here, right? But your body is nimble, right? You can hold it. So I think what is happening is the way we're holding it, right? I think part of what happened with my experience of growing up in that religious community, I showed you told you about the beautiful part, right? But it had a fundamentalist backbone. The expression was beautiful, right? But it was closed and tight, right? And so part of what's happening is that those of us that are looking for justice are embodying the same dogmatic ethos, right? What I tell people is, it looks like it, it smells like it, it tastes like it. I grew up in it. I know what it is, and I don't want anything to do with it. You know, I don't want anything to do with it. I might want what you want, right? But I'm not going to lose my humanity, right? My dignity, my capacity to see the other and love the other and understand that there's a darkness inside of me that I can't just externalize on everybody else, right? I can't do that. That is not the way, right? And so that's essential to this work. And so as I redefine my work, I set those terms, right? When somebody wants to get coached, or when somebody's going to participate in some healing work with me, or when somebody's going to come to something I'm hosting, right? I am ever more clear, right? That's a boundary. That I'm actually going to, if holding on to ideology as your core identity, if that commitment is bigger, right, than the commitment to freedom, to love, and to the liberation of others, right? If that commitment to ideology is bigger, then we're not gonna work together. That's not what we're gonna do. Yeah.
Gibran, this is incredible. So it's interesting you bring this up. You know, because me being a coach, you know, very similar to you, I don't ever call myself a leadership coach, but a huge part of what I end up doing, you know, most of my clients are starting new businesses and they're all coaches and healers, which automatically puts you in a role of leadership in some level. That's what I believe, right? And I do believe, you know, if you're here committed to transformation and healing, you have to also be a leader. Like, it just goes along with it, right? And it's interesting how rough it's been for a lot of people over the last couple of years, meaning you come out and say something, it's from a pure place, it's just from your truth, and like someone's friend is upset, or who are you to say this, or, you know, you are wrong. I mean, this actually happened to me recently, and it was very interesting because it was such a test, a deep, deep test of my own leadership and my own commitment to like, what is my truth and what do I want to see in the world? You know, as a guiding light of, okay, someone criticized me very publicly, didn't use my name, but they made it very obvious it was me. And they also, of course, did not tell the full story. They told 50% of it. And, you know, there's the awareness of like, oh, I could fight back, where this then becomes like the dogma, like you said, like this person believes this one way only. And Beth believes this other way, so she's wrong. And I'm going to tell the whole world about it. And, you know, I actually was really tested and I took this place. I kept actually getting these kind of downloads coming through around being the center of a cyclone, like just staying really centered and really strong in my heart. And also, and this actually leads to my next question, also knowing that person that said that was actually coming from a very wounded place. Like there's something much deeper there, you know, to cause that. And so this is what I was going to ask you next is, what do you feel is the cause of all this divisiveness? And do you feel that there is an actual way out of it? Like, because of course, right now, we're in the end of 2021. It's only seemed, you know, every day seems to be getting crazier and crazier. And there's so much like tension on the planet. But do you feel like what is the root cause of this, in your opinion? And what is our way out? And is right. there a way out?
Right. That's a beautiful question. And I'll be present here and on my own edge, right? Because I know that we are living in a world in which painting the optimistic, uplifting story is the way to get the likes and the hits, right? And I think I'm the most optimistic person I know, to be honest with you, right? But I am also really committed to looking at reality as it is. And reality is that right now, you and I are alive through the sixth great extinction. That's the fact. That's not, right? Like that is a tragic, truth that we are contending with. That it's happening. It's not like it's gonna happen. Like, no, the species are dying, right? Like, that's, this is our time. And so what does it mean to like look at that reality clearly in the face, right? And so the question that I ask myself is, what will our descendants need to live and thrive in a world that has collapsed, right? As, right, like that possibility, right? Our ancestors had, this is not the first apocalypse. Like, you were, if you were in Africa, in Western Africa 500 years ago, like, right? Or if you were in North America, right? 500 years ago, like, that's the apocalypse. We go through the apocalypse. Like, and the Europeans themselves, the plague, right? Like, it's, there's like a, that's why mythos is so important, right? Because there is a cycle, right, that includes the coming of darkness, right? And that with that comes fear, and with the fear comes division, right? And so at one level, I want us to keep our mythical lens on, as you know from the Watch What People Do class, right? And when I think about race specifically, I think about, well, your ancestors made a deal with the devil, right? And you got all kinds of goodies out of that, right? But it was still the devil, right? So your job is to descend into the darkness, right? And undo that deal, right? And so it includes the darkness, right? It includes the experience that you had, right? I've had similar experiences, and you know, when I've been in it, I remember the last time I went through one of those, right, where you just, you go through this kind of cancellation, public shaming things. I was like, oh, wait a minute. I know what's happening. I'm just on a slow motion ayahuasca journey, right? Like, it's hard, right? And what did I do? I sit and I breathe. And I let everything be as it is, you know? And I trust that the goddess is with me, right? And so there is, so when you work with your clients, right? Or when I work with mine, I could make a better sale, right? By, if I told you, I'm going to make it so that you don't, that this doesn't happen to you, right? Boku money, people will pay you to lie to them, right? But that's not it. Like, that's not gonna happen, right? We need to what I can do is help you be, right, who you need to be given the age that you're alive in, right? And that means like the waves come, and it when you're out of integrity, you will know. When you're in integrity, you can handle the wave, right? When you look around and the people that are being served and the people that have all the good stuff look a certain way only, right? When you are a Burning Man, which I love, I'm a burner, right? But you're talking radical inclusion and there's no people of color there, right? Like, those things you got to deal with. Like, you just have to deal with them. And you got to go through the discomfort, the unease, the being challenged. You know that some of that challenging is going to be unfair, right? But you're dealing with an ancestral deal with the devil, right? And you're making it right, not by like losing your dignity. That's not allowed, right? You can't fight for somebody's dignity by losing your own, right? So how do you keep your dignity as you're confronted by history and your place in it?
Wow, this is incredible. I really love that quote about dignity. That's so true. And that's a great quote for people to keep in mind through these times. And I agree, I was cracking up because I quite literally yesterday recorded a solo episode about how my program is like an ayahuasca journey, because it's a 12-month program. And, you know, this is one of my few programs. And the reality is, yeah, I'm like a no BS person. I never have been. And I'm constantly talking about these initiations that you have to go through. This is where the growth and the healing comes in, right? Like, it's not through just the love and light. I wish it all was, because then the whole world would be just love and light, love and light. But the reality is every challenge we're faced with, and this is the same as above, so below, on the collective and the whole and the earth, the universe, the planet, you know, we have to sit in this darkness. We have to go into it and we have to experience it and feel it fully to really be able to like create the world that we want to live in. And like you said, create the world for, you know, our descendants. And what does that look like? So you are saying some pretty like intense things that I have not gone that far into myself, like a deal with the devil or, you know, the ancestral deal. You know, I do understand like there's a lot of, you know, like we were incarnated here at this time for a reason. And sometimes I'm like, really? Did I really ask to come now? Like, I don't think so. But, you know, we are here and there's a reason why. But I'm curious, do you bring in this ancestral work into your programs and your leadership training? And how does this fit in? I'm curious.
I do. And I'm learning how to do it. And like, here's the point. Like, if you want to get the client, right? And the client is not open to this, then there's probably not the client for you, right? At the same time, there's some pretty intense stuff, right? So you kind of need to lay some groundwork for people to contend with it. So basically, what I do is I make the invitation. The slots are limited, right? I say we're going to have 5 sessions. Right? If at the end of 5 sessions, we need 5 more, we're going to do 5 more. After 10, we are going to pause no matter what. We're looking here for change that is self-sustained, right? So you're starting to create a container for transformation, a kind of pressure cooker for the change. Now, from like the business side, like this is an entrepreneur, and a smart entrepreneur would be like, no, dude, like the sale is the hardest part. Like once you have the client, you keep the client, right? But there's something to like creating a container, right? Then I also say, the spiritual part, this ancestral part, is going to be here in the middle, right? It's not like I'm going to come to the corner and be in my altar and then come and just be a good person. No, like we're talking about transformation. We're in a prayer together, right? And so the other thing is like, let's say we're having that assessment, I'm also making sure that you're not committed to a victim ideology. Like I'm not, right? Like I'm not gonna do that. And so look for somebody else. Then I say in every coaching session, I wanna tell you something about yourself that your friends are afraid to tell you, right? So we're negotiating honesty. And I wanna end this session with you doing something real in the real world. I don't want you to just have a different thought pattern, right? Like, yeah, I want you to have a difficult conversation, right? I want you to like engage a particular practice, but like something that like if an alien came in from outer space, they could see that you're doing something, not like that you're thinking something, right? And so those are some ways in which I set the stage for that kind of truly transformational like thing. And it will redefine your leadership. Like when you come into alignment with yourself, it becomes less about what you do. You gotta do things. We just talked about that, right? But more about what you are embodying, right? And that becomes perceptible. So leadership is embodied, like the human animal is so socially smart, right? Like you might be able to do a song and dance on Instagram, right? But when they're with you long enough, right? They'll know whether you're true or not. So your only job is to become the truth, right? Is to integrate with yourself. And the only way there, like you just already said, is by going through the darkness over and over again.
Oh my God, this sounds incredible. And yes, this is something I bring up a lot with my own clients, that it really, you know, in the work that I do and this kind of work, I'm always recommending like leadership training and, you know, getting into your body and grounding, but it has to be experiential. And I'm also very, probably much like you, I'm very mission driven. Like I always have been since I was a kid, and I have, you know, a grander vision for how we're here to co-create this earth. And it can't come just through sitting and chanting and praying. I mean, yes, trust me, that's a huge part of my daily practice is meditation, chanting, prayer. But at the same time, we're in this earth-based 3D reality, which involves tangible things. And, you know, money is still tangible and the world is still tangible. And we still have politics and we still have policies. And I'm the same way. I'm like, you know, we're not going to make change just by thinking. Yes, you know, I do believe in the energetics of collective. But at the same time, we need to have this be an embodied practice to actually go and be the leaders in the new world. So I love this. I'm like, oh, my God, this is so cool. I'm curious because this I find it to be rare that there are people out there teaching what you're teaching. I'm curious what your background, like how this even came about to do this kind of leadership training. Was this just through your own, you know, the religious experience, the spiritual experience, yeah, the plant medicines?
Thank you for asking. You know, I do not consider myself a Marxist by any means, but there's a Marxist phrase that I think holds a lot of power, which is objective conditions, right? Like, nice, do yoga, feel good. Like, it's amazing, right? But like, if you're not paying attention to the objective conditions, I'm not even talking about the subjective conditions, right? Which is what you're tending to on the yoga mat and the meditation cushion. If you're not paying attention to the objective conditions of the people in your society, right? Then you are still lost, right? In the trap of postmodern narcissism, right? Which is got so, it can be so spiritual in nature, which is what leads to like psychedelic tourism, right? And there is something, and again, I'm not a person that is against being in the marketplace. We're an entrepreneurial podcast and I believe in it, but like we need to understand there's this thing, I'm forgetting her name, the author of Dopamine Nation, Lemke, I think it's Anna Lemke. She talks about limbic capitalism, right? Like your limbic system is being continually hijacked, right? By the news or the Instagram feed or the, right? And you just
like,
and you're not paying attention to the conditions, right? To the objective conditions of your society, then you're lost, right? Then you have lost your way, even if you're doing the best asanas in the world. How? It's a combination of things. I think I did live in an intentional community, right? And I saw the failures of it, like the day, you know. But I also saw the power of it. So I believe in community. When I left politics, I went to get to facilitation and consulting. Social change for social change organizations. And to me at the time, facilitation was like getting people through a meeting or building a strategic plan, right? And then I met a mentor. His name is Robert Gass, and he was like the Michael Jordan of facilitation, right? And it was just an entirely other level of work, right? And then, actually, I'll take a quick aside since we're in a psychedelic podcast. I've been working with psychedelics for a long time, with grandmother medicine being kind of the anchor of my spiritual practice. And just on my last journey, and I don't journey all the time, it's been three this year, I entered an entirely new level that I hadn't been at before. And it wasn't a fun one, right? It had to be one of the hardest journeys I've ever had, right? And like, you start, you open your, like, I even opened my eyes and it's like, and you're like, oh, like this, I got hours, like, here we go. And it's transferred, it, so there's other, so this is a little bit of how I felt when I saw this guy at work. I'm like, and I knew that that's what I was called to do, right? Now, what's interesting is that at the same time, at this place where I worked, we were working a place called the Interaction Institute for Social Change. He wasn't there. That's not where my mentor was, but I met him at the same time. And at the Interaction Institute, we were working on the application of network theory to social change, right? And so what I was able to put together was that, you go through these transformational experiences together, right? And they help you develop as a leader and as a person, right? And become whatever you're trying to get better at, right? If you're doing the work, if you're doing the integration, right? A better lover, a better partner, a better business person, a better parent, like if you do the work, right? But what people were not paying enough attention to was the web of relationship. If we're going through this experience together, we're forging a human bond, right? And what the big insight was, like, that's the power, that's the thing. The thing is not the just what the individual is trying to do. The real magic here is what's happening among us, right? Because if we stay a we in some form or another, our integration of the work is going to just up, like it's going to be exponentially greater. Like, so I measure my most successful work by how close the people who participate are to each other 5 years after, right? Like, and I am. I'll tell you a quick short story of something I'm so proud of, and I am by no means and in no way taking credit for this victory. But when I ran for office in 2005, it was a gerrymandered district, meaning the district was drawn so that the community of color would have less power, right? And so we won in my community by like 60% of the vote, but then the other side of the district, they got like 6% of the vote, right? And so that's intentionally drawn. That's what's happening right now, by the way, people, if you're paying attention to redistricting. The point of this is not that, is that on election day in November of this year, I went to celebrate, right, the victory party of the Black Dominican woman who finally, 16 years later, won that seat, right? It took, see, but the reason why I bring it up is because so many people that have been, that were part of the campaign knew each other through my work, right? They have built community, not exclusively, again, anybody listening, Gibran is not saying I did this. And yet I know that there was something fundamental, like laying the ground for transformational relationships among these people that would not ever have known each other, right? Including like lovers, like new relationships, like, right? And so when we went to the victory party, she invited me to speak, right? Not only because I ran, but and in this political victory party, because when she declared herself this a black woman, right, Dominican woman, I said, I paused, and in the political victory party, I called on the ancestors, and I said, the generations of black women that saw their babies taken from their arms, right? How do you teach your baby? How do you teach your child the most important thing that they need to know? As quickly as possible, knowing that you don't know how long you'll have them. What would they need to survive, right? Those are the things that we're rescuing, right? The things that mothers had to whisper to their children before they were taken from them.
Whoa, powerful. I have tears in my eyes. It's interesting because I had actually, my team had emailed you on that day and we got you out of office and it just said holding space. And I was like, I hope he's out partying. but I was like, you know, I can imagine what he's doing, you know, celebrating and prayer. And like, I mean, I get it, but that's so beautiful. And it's interesting. I was recently in, I don't even know what to call it. It was kind of a training, a healing. We were learning a lot of somatic therapy techniques, also working with medicines, going back to a lot of native, you know, we did a vision quest and a lot of, you know, indigenous traditions in this almost year-long program. And it was all about healing in relation, you know, and being in community. And it was only 12 of us because it's, you know, this program's only been going for a few years. But it was interesting because I had never actually given that thought. And I have been doing this transformational group work since, you know, the early 90s is kind of when I started, you know, like on the deeper path. And I had never really thought about that. I was like, oh, yeah, there is something to doing this in community, in groups, in staying in relationship and having that effect on the world at large and not just having it be about you and your own healing and your own self and your own person. I always call it your personal drama, you know, because of course, yeah, we all have our personal drama, but, you know, the real collective change has to come through this interconnection. Now, I'm curious, you know, I want to bring up something that's come up a lot within this, you know, the medicine space. And I've always held, you know, I have my own views on it. And, you know, there are many people who kind of agree with me. And then there's a lot of people who are like angry about everything. But what are your views on how to be in this right relationship when it comes to the medicine and these, and you know, I'm on a very similar path as you. My main medicine is ayahuasca. But, you know, of course, I've worked with mushrooms and other, you know, other medicines. But now that psychedelics are growing so fast, meaning, you know, they're entering into the mainstream, they're being, you know, there's now companies being established and venture capital going into it. And there has been a lot of discussion about how do we get this into balance like now and not later. And, you know, what are your views on this? Because I've had people say like, well, it's appropriation to, you know, have this tattoo of an Icaro on my arm, or you're white, so you shouldn't be working with medicine because this comes from an indigenous community down in, you know, in the jungle. You know, I've had very few people say that. It's actually the minority of people that say that, but it has come up, you know, even with mushrooms. You know, there's so much talk around psilocybin and how it's being used for end of life therapy and other, you know, therapeutic modalities. But I'm curious, you know, how your viewpoint and the work you do plays, like, what was your view on how to handle this as a whole?
Yeah, it's a complicated one because appropriation has been real, and it is, right? I was just listening to a great podcast series called Loud on Spotify. It was the history of reggaeton. And I'm reggaeton is like, I will, that's my music, right? Like, I'll get it in. It's my thing. And he was talking again, like, even there, even coming from Latin America, there's less and less black artists, right? Though, like, the root source is Afro-Latin, right? And so we need to pay attention, right? So there's something about the reverence for the people that have held the medicine, you know? There's something about knowing that people take three journeys, they feel, and they declare themselves healers, right? And so, like, you don't, right? And so those are things that we all want to be careful with. I am of the mind that these medicines need to be made available to more people, right? And that there's going to be a diversity of modalities. Some will be indigenous, some will be therapeutic. I always tell people, I'm not using the therapeutic route, right? That's not, I mean, it's healing, right? But I wouldn't pass as a therapist, right? Given some of my approaches. And so who's getting rich, right? And who's staying poor? Ask yourself that question, right? In the church I grew up in, you give 10%, you know? How much are you giving back to the people that have held this for the generations, you know? The idea that you can only be of a certain lineage to hold a medicine, that one doesn't make sense to me, because there's medicines all over the world. There's been medicine. There's like very few places on the planet that don't have medicine. On the flip side, I don't think you can morally use peyote and not be in the Native American church just because it's not sustainable, right? You have other medicines, like San Pedro, that work. Like, don't do that. You can't. Either be part of that church or don't. You're taking their medicine away. Like, that's, don't do that, you know? So it's complicated, right? Like, you gotta look at it and notice who's getting rich, who's staying poor, and always remember that we live through the end of the European Enlightenment project of the isolated self. Those are the words of Professor John Powell. We've been like hyper-individuated to a fault. So individuated that we're the richest society that the world has ever seen, but we're the loneliest and the most anxious and the most depressed. And so whatever it is, it has to include turning to one another, understanding that community gets messy, you know? That it involves vulnerability, that it's not gonna be, right? So that it takes, it's, to me, I would say that the most important practice in my life, aside from my own kind of meditation practice, is not even the medicine work, it's this emergent dialogue work. And my teachers there, Thomas Steinberg and Elizabeth Diebold, and just people are interested, they have a site called One World in Dialogue, and they have courses. And to me, that turning to the we space is where the possibility is. It's where the emergence is. It's where the wisdom to survive and thrive in times of darkness will come from.
Oh my God, I'm here. I have to say, you and Paul Stamets win the award for making me cry during an interview. Because this is, it's so, you're saying so much that's been so near and dear to my heart for so long. And it's been really, you know, it's been complicated to talk about. I'm very much, I agree, you know, I've been down to the jungle multiple times. I've been in it and watch, you know, the person I work with harvests very sustainably the ayahuasca and chacruna and replants and has his own land where there's, you know, 800 plants growing. But I agree, this has come up so much around sustainability and then accessibility, which, you know, I literally just donated some money last night to a friend of mine who's doing medicine circles for within her own Dominican and Puerto Rican community in the Bronx, like literally in the Bronx, doing combo. And she's also a doula. And, you know, it's, she tells these stories and there's this reality, and more people think, God is God. There are more and more people doing this work within these communities where, you know, they can't be paying $500 to go drink ayahuasca or $300 to do combo, and it's not sustainable. So there is a lot of the, this has actually come up on my podcast over and over and over and over about how do we, because I feel the same way as you, and like these plants have such an ability to heal with the proper integration, with the conversations, with the, you know, navigating the dark and the light and the ups and the downs and the contractions and expansions. But how do we bring this all into the right balance? And I agree with you, like the money has been a very interesting discussion and it's been hard. But you know, the prayer and these talks, these awarenesses and bringing this up and having these conversations at least is starting the ball rolling. And I do know the more everybody's been vocal and outspoken about it, the more I don't think, I keep saying, these companies that don't bring this into their business model, they won't last. They just will not sustain, because people won't, people like me and you, I won't support it, period. You know, there's already certain companies I'm like, I will not invest in you. I don't, you know, you don't have the right ethos. And I come from this, you know, my background was in corporate America. And I said this 15, you know, 20 years ago, I'm like, this is not sustainable for the earth. I gotta quit. I can't contribute to this. Bye. So Jabron, I know you only have a few more minutes left. I want to give you an opportunity to talk about what you have going on, where people can find you. Also, if you have any upcoming programs in the new year and what's on your plate for, you know, this year, and then also your future vision of where your work is going. I'm curious.
It's interesting, Beth, because with the future vision, I do a lot of work to help people make their vision real, you know? And what is happening for me, remember I told you I met my mentor and then I knew that that's where I wanted to go. And then I aimed and then I got there, right? Which is in some ways archetypally masculine, regardless of your gender, right? Like an energy, right? And so what's happening in my journey right now is like the goddess keeps telling me, like, that's not it. It's not like your next 10-year goal. Like, you're going to keep tuning in. You're going to keep surrendering. You're going to keep opening. I do know that it is away from the current business model, which is facilitating large scale, like convenings brought together by big foundations for social change leaders, like that kind of thing. Is going to be, I want the contract to be within the participant and myself. I don't want an institution to be the person making the agreement, because if you make a contract with me, quite honestly, and I don't mean to sound like a jerk, if you start acting out or if you start saying, I'm like, yeah, this is you. Sorry, you came to the wrong place. Like, we're doing the real thing here, and maybe we're not a match, right? Maybe you're looking for something else, and that's, I can't do that when an institution has brought the people together. So that's, I know what I'm moving away from. I also know that I'm not going to do performative wokeness, right? Like none of this stuff where like people are giving themselves license to hate and be hateful and calling it justice. Like, I know it's away from that, right? So what is it towards? It's towards wherever she wants to take me. I can tell you that the coaching is working, and I was always been more of a group facilitator, but the coaching has been phenomenal. I'm going to launch a group coaching product that's going to be a premium product, and it's going to be small. Like, I'm going to start with like 4 people at a time, 10 weeks, just intensive at a higher level. But then I'm also doing a free program called Boost Your Practice, which is a way for us to keep ourselves accountable to each other, to like wake up at a certain time, to get your meditation in, to exercise, you know, to do like 5 things every day. And like, we do this fun thing with teams. And so we'll do that. And that will start at the beginning of the year. So different ways to engage.
Amazing. I love it. Well, we're going to have all of Jabron's links right here in the show notes. I know he also has an amazing podcast on YouTube. And we'll link these upcoming programs. Jabron, this is, during our conversation, I already thought of like 20 people I need to pass your name on to, because your message to me is so important for these times. I mean, exactly what you just ended with, because this, you know, again, this has come up so much around this, like, well, where is the woke and what's real and what's not? And what's, you know, are you coming at this with the love and compassion? And is this actually creating change, or are you just being angry, you know, and like, How do leaders get this right? Because there's a lot of chaos right now. And I'm very much like you. I tend to be optimistic. And I'm like, everything will be great no matter what. Somehow, you know, it might just really be intense. But your message is so important. I thank you so much for taking the time to be here. And we'll have all your links right here in the show notes. Thank you very much. It was an honor to speak to you.
It has been a grace. Blessings to you and blessings to each of your listeners and to the people that are all of us just out here doing our best. Remember that we have ancestors and remember that we'll have descendants. Many blessings. Thank you.
Have a good rest of your day and we'll see you on Tuesday for another episode. I hope you enjoyed the episode. If you're feeling inspired, I'd appreciate it if you showed your love with a review. And check out my YouTube channel where you can find the video version of this podcast. You can also head to bethaweinstein.com to learn more about me and grab my free business growth trainings. Remember, you carry your own unique medicine, and your medicine is what we need for these times.